You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another Pit Mailbag here on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He is Chris Carter. I am Noah Hiles. Carter, no way to sugarcoat it. This is about as bad as it gets. If you're the Pitt football program, Pitt fell to 1-4. Excuse me. It wishes it fell to 4-1. It fell to 1-4 Saturday evening in Blacksburg, Virginia, as it lost a not very good Virginia Tech team. 0-2 in the ACC. The bye week has arrived, so no Monday afternoon press conference for Pat Narduzzi, which I'm sure he's very happy about, because there are a lot of questions to be answered about this team, and I don't think he has a lot of answers to those questions. It's just probably the darkest it's ever been since he arrived here.
I think that's very easy to say right now. 1-4, nothing seems to be working on either side of the ball. The defense is getting run through, not just giving up big plays in the pass game. That's the thing, is that whatever a Pat Narduzzi defense, you know, was, even if it's roughest times, may give up big plays in the passing game, but you are not going to run the ball on it at will, and that seems to be happening in this part of the season. And the offense, where they at least would dominate the line of scrimmage, they haven't done that either. And I wrote about that in my film study, just about how badly this offensive line has been specifically. And it's stemming into the identity that Pitt football at least had going for it, that even if this was an off year, they'd win the trenches, they'd get after the quarterback, they'd run the football, and they'd have a decent season at the end of the year, and maybe they just need to reset at quarterback. But now, at this point, they're looking like they need resets across the board, and that's what's super troubling.
Yeah, it really is. And we've got a lot of questions to answer here in today's mailbag. But before we do, we got to talk about our presenting sponsor, which is Mike's Beer Bar. Whether if you're in town for a Steelers, Pirates, or Pitt game, Mike's Beer Bar is right across the street from PNC Park and has the best selection of beer in town, as well as an amazing list of food options. They have over 20 TVs, and you can catch all of your NFL, college football, Pirates, Penguins, Riverhounds, and Premier League action right at Mike's. Come on in and try one of their 500 different available beers, 300 of them being local craft beers, as well as 80 different local craft beers available on tap. You can also get a flight and try out every option you can dream of. And trust me, you won't run out of favorites, because I never do, and I'm always there. Try their steak on a stone for an awesome meal, where you can choose how hot you want your steak cooked with a heated stone right in front of you as you enjoy a night out in Pittsburgh. Come to Mike's Beer Bar and get your sports fix and experience the best bar in Pittsburgh. All right, so shout out to Mike's. Let's get into the questions. Nate starts us off. If Narduzzi was to leave for Michigan State, what caliber coach would Pitt seek out? Is someone like Dan Mullen out of the question? This is an interesting question. I'm not sure now what the Narduzzi to East Lansing rumors are looking like. You know, they were the talk over the past weekend leading up to the game, but at this rate, I mean, I don't know if Michigan State will tolerate hiring a guy who's coming off of a 2, 3, 4 win season at best, which is the way it's like looking for Pitt right now. But let's assume that they're willing to look past that and Narduzzi does go there. And again, he has been rumored and in the mix here, but the worse things go for Pitt, the more I don't know if that's going to end up happening. But let's assume Pat does leave. His replacement will be interesting. Now, they threw out the name, Nate threw out the name Dan Mullen. I look at Dan Mullen and think that that's probably not an ideal fit for Pitt, and here's why. Dan Mullen's a guy, I think, who will look at Pitt as a stepping stone. And that's not what Pitt really wants to hire. They're going to want another guy like Pat Narduzzi, who's going to come in here and be around for 7, 8, 9, 10 years if possible. And that's very hard to find for any program at the collegiate level for a multitude of different reasons. But Mullen, I think, is a guy who, I mean, right now he just needs a job. And he did stay around at Mississippi State for a decent amount of time. So maybe that would be the case here at Pitt. But I just think that a guy like Mullen probably looks at Pitt as more of a stepping stone, where there are other guys out there that you could probably go to, and they might have a better connection here and want to stick around longer. And I think that's what they're probably looking for. But out of all the names that are possibilities, like reasonable possibilities, guys who aren't like Urban Meyer or someone, I mean, Mullen would probably be like one of the bigger names that Pitt could go get, because, I mean, they pay well. It is a Power 5 job, but I don't think that would probably be the guy that they want. Carter, what about you?
Yeah, I'm not on the Mullen bandwagon. I mean, that's also a guy's last stint was with Florida, made them really competitive really quickly, but then got fired shortly afterwards with them falling apart. You know, I think that he was able to recruit well at Florida, but, you know, Florida also has a lot of assets in the SEC that I don't think are readily available to Pitt in that department. So I'm not 100% sure, you know, if he'd be familiar with that. I think Pitt needs to go after a younger coach who could be looking to set up here for quite some time, some guy that might be able to, you know, kind of recharge. If again, this is on a very, very, this is like, we are taking three steps to get to here, but yeah, like Pat Narduzzi and Michigan State even talking, and then them choosing Pat Narduzzi. You know, if I'm Michigan State and I'm looking at this year at Pitt, I might be looking at Narduzzi and saying like, I don't know, and trying to find someone else and maybe even find some of these people. But like, you know, guys like a Jesse Minter, who's been at Michigan and with their, as their defensive coordinator, guys like Garrett Riley at TCU, guys that I think that, you know, they've had some traction as coordinators on their side of the ball. And I think especially guys like Minter, like, you know, that's a guy that's been in Michigan, similarly to Pat, he'd be a defensive coordinator from a Big Ten school. But I look at guys like that and, you know, other coaches who might be in a similar area, you know, maybe not like, you know, the ACC specifically, but he's coming from Michigan, you know, you're coming from the Midwest. You could scout that area. You can learn more about the East Coast. There's connections there that you can build. But if you want a head coach, you want a younger head coach who I think can instill the same defensive principles that you have been able to maintain. I think it's the biggest thing that Pat Narduzzi has helped reestablish for Pitt. Keep those defensive principles, but also be open to a more modern style of offense that we saw for a little bit with Kenny Pickett and Mark Whipple when they really put it together in 2021. But we obviously haven't seen the last 2 years.
Yeah, so I guess the way to conclude that is it's just really hard to predict what type of hire Pitt will want to make, because they still have a head coach right now. And I think they're going to have a head coach for the foreseeable future at the very least. I mean, if these rumors pick up, then yeah, I think it's kind of weird to speculate what they'll do after Narduzzi leaves, because we don't know if he's going to leave. But I will say this, like, as we wrap up this thing, I mean, there's a couple of things that I think should be noted. Heather Like, in her other coaching hires, has hired people that she has a little bit of familiarity with. I mean, you just look at like one of her more recent hires, the softball coach. She played with her at Michigan. So Chris, you know, you naming the defensive coordinator for Michigan, I mean, she's going to probably look at people who she has good insight on. And if she still knows people in the Michigan athletic department or somewhere like that, that might be somewhere to lean on. But the other thing is, you know, Pitt pays coaches well. I mean, Narduzzi's paid well, Capel's paid well. And I mean, these coaches come in with solid starting salaries as well before they get extended. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. But again, I'm not 100% sure that Narduzzi's going to be gone, especially
that's my
how
thing.
Things like, are like, looking right now.
like let's stop skipping that part of this that Pat Narduzzi signed through 2030. And again, like we talked about this in our last mailbag episode. I'm not 100% sure he wants to necessarily leap. I think he Pat Narduzzi, we know of all his traits, good or bad, he is stubborn. He wants to prove that he can win with what he's got. He's kept a lot of the same coaches for such a long time. He wants to prove that what he's doing here at Pitt is the right thing. I don't think he's going to leave. Like we talked about, if we're going to pick one or the other, Heather Like or him, I'd pick Heather Like to leave because she's done so well at Pitt, and you know, Ohio State can offer a really big bag and give her an opportunity to do something at one of the biggest college sports programs and athletic departments in the country. That's different than what Pat Narduzzi's in. Pat Narduzzi, he has his money locked up for quite some time. He has his system. This is his house. I think he'll want to defend it. And if they struggle to the end of this year, and this is a terrible season, I think he'll want to prove with Pitt that this was an anomaly compared to everything else he's done.
Yeah. And that might be his only option too, you know, if he doesn't get a job offer. So we'll see. JFF asks, can you provide input on what wide receivers / tight ends are doing in terms of routes and separation with the limited number of plays due to the inability to sustain drives? It would be great to know which wide receivers and tight ends are executing their roles well beyond the QB not being able to get them the ball.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Carter, I'll let you start with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of problems with Pitt. I see guys getting open. I see guys, running their routes. But you can also start to see frustration seeping in when the pass game isn't working, when so many other functional parts of the offense aren't working. And that is just – and that's a reality thing. It happens a lot with younger players too. But I think you see encouragement from guys like Kanate Mumfield who are making diving catches in ridiculous situations even when the game is already getting out of hand. And you could say, like, you know what? This game ain't on me, but you see them fighting to the end there. I think that there's things that everyone can clean up, but I don't think this is the biggest problem. And I actually wrote about this for my film study. The offensive line getting its butt kicked is a major issue for Pitt.
Yeah.
They are now the second to last team in rushing offense in the ACC. That shouldn't be happening when you're supposed to be the team that's going to bully people across the ball. And, it's fundamental things. And that's what my Pitt film study was looking at for the Post-Gazette. Find that at post-gazette.com. But These aren't plays where you're asking guys to have remarkable blocks, or they're just getting outperformed by big mauling defensive tackles. We're talking about Blake Zabovic just missing in the interior. Him and Terrence Moore on a play where it was third and two, and they needed just Daniel Carter to just get 2 yards inside zone, simple alignment. They both, Zabovic and Terrence Moore, are lined up next to each other. There's a defensive tackle lined up in between them. Neither of them touch him. Moore goes one way, blocks nobody. Zabovic goes the other way, doesn't block anybody, and he walks through. The linebacker just comes through and blows up the play. The defensive tackle that at least could have been chipped by Dupovich just comes through, and they destroy the play there. There's other plays where, like, Ryan Bear, redshirt freshman, and he's younger, so he's learning. But you're seeing him. The biggest thing you want to see out of Ryan Bear is that you're coming out with fire. You're young. You got to prove something. You're going to hit somebody. And there are plays where he's getting beat off the ball. Like, the other guy is just simply quicker in his step. He's inside of him before Ryan Bear's even taken his first step. And those are things that you need to be better at as a player. You may lose on technique. You may lose on some situations that are outside of your control, or just by savvier veterans. But as far as getting off the ball, being first, being aggressive in that first step, that is something you must be able to do. And Dave Borbley has to get that out of his offensive line. That's where I put the emphasis of the problems on offense right now, on top of Phil Jurkovec and other issues with Frank Cignetti.
Yeah, and to tie in kind of what you just said to this question, I think it's hard to analyze how well routes are being ran when the play ends before the route tree can really unfold. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's sometimes where you look at the end of the play and Kanate Mumfield doesn't have anyone within 15 yards of him. But what happened on that play? Was Jurkovec even able to look downfield? at his receivers. Like, yeah. I mean, the defender might have just given up on the play just because he saw the quarterback's laying on his back. And then there's other instances where, you know, you could point at Phil just looking at one side of the field the whole time. So it doesn't necessarily matter if the guy on the backside ran his post well, if that was not even in consideration for that play. And I think that that's especially been the case in the last couple of weeks, Carter, is you could see a lot of their passing concepts that are drawing up. They're keeping it simple. They're keeping it to one side of the field where he can drop back, he can look, and he's got option one deep, option two mid-size, you know, or mid-range throw, option three in the flat. And he's not looking out to the other side. He doesn't have to read in a whole side of the field because he's clearly struggling, and so is the protection. So with that all being said, they're letting it just keep it simple and cutting the field in half for him. But even with that, because the protection's been so bad, because the quarterback himself has been so bad, there's just no way to really look at how well guys are running their routes just because no one else is executing. So I would say, yeah, Gavin Bartholomew's been fine just based off of his production and the fact that he pretty much catches the ball every time he's targeted, which you can't really say about anyone else on the team. Kanate Mumfield, I think, is just proven to be a really good route runner, not just based on this year, but last year as well. And the times where he does make plays, he's wide open. And that's a product of the route running. But between poor execution on the offensive line, poor execution from the quarterback, and I'll even throw this in there, poor play calling. It's really hard to evaluate the receivers and tight ends as far as route running goes. There's been clear miscommunication there, I think. I mean, you could obviously point to Means and Dracovic not being on the same page, but overall, it's everything else has been so bad, it's really hard to look at them as a group right now. So yeah, we'll move forward. Nicholas wants to know. Nicholas says he's read that Pitt may be moving its previously scheduled 2027 game against Wisconsin to Ireland. He's curious what is about the financial comparison of giving up a home game, lost gate revenues, concessions, etc., versus a marquee week zero road game matchup in Ireland. Is Pitt giving up revenue, or is Pitt giving up revenue for exposure, or is there enough of an additional incentive kicked in by the networks to cover any lost home game revenues? Sorry, I had to read it like that. This is a long question and it doesn't show in the general abbreviation there. And it continues, I'm operating under the assumption that the home game versus Wisconsin will be a sellout or close to it. Okay, so we both did a little digging into this, Carter. I'm going to start by basically explaining what I've learned here. Multiple articles that I've read showed that when two teams go to Ireland, they're compensated. And yeah, it's not necessarily by the network. It's by Ireland. It's the country pays to have these two teams come over and compete. And that's through sponsorships that they sell for that game. That's through a whole bunch of, that's their efforts. They pay those two teams to come over and compete. They pay for their travel, and the home team, the team that would have the home game, gets the bigger end of that compensation. So in this case, in 2027, Pitt is supposed to be home against Wisconsin. So Pitt would get the bigger payout than Wisconsin. And that payout is supposed to equate to a number similar to what they would have in an average home game. Now, as Nick pointed out, this game would probably be something a little bit more than an average home game for Pitt. You would figure that the tickets would sell well for Wisconsin coming to Pittsburgh. Now, with that being said, from what I've read, when they have these games, and this past year was an anomaly because Notre Dame was the home team against Navy this year. But in past years, when Ireland does this, they like for the smaller brand of the two to be the home game, because that means they can pay that. Like if last year was Nebraska versus Northwestern, they wanted Northwestern to be the home team because Northwestern makes probably a third of what Nebraska does during its home football games. Right. That's probably similar to what Pitt and Wisconsin compare to, where Wisconsin, you're packing that Camp Randall Stadium out for every game or close to it. And especially for a matchup, you know, against an ACC opponent like Pitt. Where Pitt, yeah, you know, they'll probably sell, I would say, around 50,000 tickets. That's, I think, a close number to where they were last year against Tennessee. I don't think this would be a sellout, but it would be a very sizable crowd. But Pitt would probably be the more affordable option of the two. I'm guessing Pitt would probably get something close to what it would be projected to make for that Wisconsin home game in 2027. But at the end of the day, I think this is still a win for Pitt, where you're making what you would make if you had a home game. There's not like a distinct home field advantage that Pitt has, if we're being honest with each other. Even in the year that it won the ACC championship, both of its losses came at home. It Yeah. performed better on the road. So it's not like you're losing out on an amazing home atmosphere that you can depend on week in and week out. So you get that money and you get some big time national exposure. If this game's played in week zero, that's the game everyone's watching. It's the first game that everyone's watching in the college football season. So yeah, I would consider it a win for Pitt. I don't know if it's a win for Wisconsin, if Wisconsin's the home team, but if Pitt's the home team and it gets the bigger chunk payout here and it gets a bye week the following week, I based off of everything that I've read, I would say that Pitt probably makes out well in this situation.
And, you know, it also depends on where they are. This game's what, 2027? Mm-hmm. So where is Pitt in 2027? Is Pat Narduzzi still here? Like yeah. You know, we were just talking about that topic there. Is Pitt really competitive in 2027? If Pitt is a really good team in 2027, like let's say that, you know, Julian Duggard is the superstar quarterback. I'm not saying that he will be, but I'm saying, let's say that he's the guy that they have coming from Penn Hills. He becomes in. Let's say he's the next Kenny Pickett, and this is the year that he's going to take off and destroy everyone's souls. Want that at Acrisure Stadium, because you'd want that there, right? But at the same token, because you'd want to get the same kind of excitement that you get when your team's really good and you're at a home atmosphere. But like you brought up, if you have that game, you know, internationally, it's the first game of the season, everyone's looking at it, everyone's paying attention to it, then it kind of puts that spotlight on you, and if you perform well in that instance, you're gonna start with a really good spark to the year. So there's good and bads to it. At the end of the day, like you said, if Ireland's compensation is matching or exceeding what you're getting as far as, you know, money, the revenue you get from having a home crowd as a senior season opener against a major Big Ten opponent, then go for it. It's a unique experience, something that you can build off of and move forward with. But it's just another one of those things that's way too down the line before I think we can see how this will actually impact Pitt. Generally, I think that most teams don't want to give up home games. You know, even though Pitt doesn't have a distinct home field advantage, as they don't have, you know, the kind of home crowds that you see like with Virginia Tech and West Virginia, where they're the only ticket in town and that's what's going to drive them there, it's still an advantage in the sense to have it on your home turf in the stadium that you're familiar with and in your home situation. So it's something to consider moving forward, but it's one of those things that, you know, business people are going to make that decision ahead of your team or above your team, and you and Pat Narduzzi and their team, they're going to just deal with the decision as it comes. I think go for it if you think it's going to be great, but I don't feel too torn, you know, that Pitt has made a poor decision in either direction with it.
I think one other thing to consider, and, you know, this is, first off, this is going to be a decision that's made years before this game is played. It could be a decision that's made this fall. But one thing you also need to consider is in 2027, this team might be taking a trip to the West Coast already. So what's this international trip adding? So I think that should be another caveat, is that, hey, you know, I believe Phillip said when these two teams on the West Coast are added, Stanford and Cal, that Pitt would be making one trip to the West Coast every two seasons. So if they're going to do this, they need to make sure that they're also not going to be playing a road game at Stanford or Cal, or ideally even at SMU this season, because adding an international trip to a trip plus a trip three time zones away in the middle of the regular season, that's a conference game, now you're stacking on a lot of flight miles, and it's becoming a little more convoluted than I think it needs to be. So that's something also to consider. And yeah, it's an interesting topic to begin with. I personally would not be opposed to heading to Ireland to cover a football game. We'll move on now. Terry wants to know, of the three main guys in Pitt's quarterback room, only Nate Yarnell has shown any competence as a Power 5 QB, albeit in limited duty. So why doesn't he get to sniff the field? All right. I want to start with this one, Carter. I apologize.
Go ahead.
Nate Yarnell played one game against Western Michigan, and I think he threw 15 passes in that game. And, well, yeah, he did fine. He did fine in that game. He was efficient. He was accurate. He did not make mistakes. And it could be argued that if a quarterback played like that for Pitt this season in each of its five games, Pitt would probably have a record better than 1-4. There's no doubt about it.
12 passes.
Yeah, he threw 12 passes. What, he was 9 of 12?
9 of 12.
For what, 114 yards, something like that?
179 with a touchdown.
179 and a touchdown. Okay, so better yardage, nonetheless.
But 12 passes, that's what I just pointed out.
12 passes against Western Michigan, and he also had a guy in the backfield named Israel Banacanda. He had a better offensive line. He had a better receiving group. And again, they're playing Western Michigan. Let's, you know, Terry pointed out, you know, he said that of the three main guys in Pitt's quarterback room, only Nate Yarnell has shown any competence as a Power 5 quarterback. That's not true. Christian Veyer also played one game in his collegiate career in a spot similar to Yarnell, where I think, I don't know if Veyer started or if he came in early in the game due to an injury, but he looked better against Rutgers in his one game at Penn State than Yarnell did against Western Michigan. So if that's the sample size there, and I get it, Veyer hasn't looked great in his limited duties at Pitt as a backup, but if we're going by past resumes, Veyer's is better than Yarnell. Plain and simple. Also, Phil Dracovic has had success at the Power 5 level. Granted, it was one season out of five, but again, he has shown some form of competence. Otherwise, Pitt wouldn't have taken him. He had a great year in 2020, if you look at the numbers. And he was especially great against Pitt. So all three of these guys have shown some form of competence as a Power 5 quarterback. And the guy who showed the most competence is the guy who's starting right now. Am I advocating for Phil Dracovic to continue starting? No, I'm not. He's been bad this year. I don't know if he's the best option on the roster or not. As based off of, you know, everything we've seen, maybe he is right now. But it still might be time to make a change. But this is the guy who has the best pass resume out of the three. So, and I get that Yarnell won a football game. I get it. And I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Nate Yarnell come in and get his opportunity if they're going to continue giving opportunities to younger guys like they have at other positions. But let's not sit here and act like Nate Yarnell is this Heisman in waiting on the depth chart. And who's to say that I don't get why there's more love for him than Veyer just because, I mean, granted, Veyer did not play well against North Carolina in the second half. I think both should be looked at equally as they both had one good game in their past. They're both young and they're both competing to be that number two, to be that guy next year. I think if you're going to give opportunities to younger quarterbacks for the rest of the year, they both should get an equal look. But Yarnell, to make the argument that Yarnell is the only one who showed competence as a Power 5 quarterback is ridiculous, in my opinion.
Listen, Pat Narduzzi says a lot of things that ticks off a lot of Pitt fans when they lose and when Pitt loses and things are falling apart. But one point that I think that he has it on is that you can't just dilly-dally just going through and just picking up, just starting whichever quarterback, whichever week, because then you start chaos. And whereas I've been on the train, like, hey, when Phil Dracovic doesn't have it, you should give someone else another chance. Like in the middle of the West Virginia game, I thought that was an instance Phil Dracovic should have been replaced. And just said, not even permanently, but Phil, you know, you're missing very obvious things right now. We're going to give another guy a shot just to see if he can bounce back. We're going to come back to you, you know, most likely at some point this season, maybe even next week if this doesn't work. But you don't want to get into the situation where you're just guessing on quarterback every single week, because then when you do and you miss on one, because another thing, like we saw Kenny Pickett have bad games for Pitt. And if you bailed on him after a bad game to find another guy, then you ruin his confidence in himself being the guy for you moving forward. You don't allow him to bounce back from the mistakes in the next game, and you stunt his growth. Beyond Nate Yarnell's, you know, potential as Christian Veyer's, I think that it makes sense to remind people that if Pitt fans had their way, you'd have seen Ty Diefenbach by now. You've gone through all four quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You've seen, Eli Kasanovich could have, come off from being a coach on the team and being played. Give him a shot. And that is where things get unreasonable. And that's where head coaches have to kind of hold the line. And that's where I give Pat Narduzzi credit. He does not bow to, fan wishes as far as what he hope, what people want to see. He's going to be steadfast. And sometimes there's that level between stubborn and persistent, right? Stubborn is when you've gone over that line. Persistent is when you know you have a belief in that system that works. You stick to it even when there's other things getting in your way. But the trick is knowing where that line exists. Few people do. The best coaches do. And I think that's where Pat Narduzzi is trying to find. And listen, not saying that Phil Dracovic is the guy lying in wait, that eventually if they stick with him, he's going to be the guy. But if you take Phil Dracovic out, you do what you did with Veyer when Phil Dracovic was hurt and he's terrible. Then you throw in Nate Yarna and he's terrible. Then you go back to Phil Dracovic. Then you've told the whole team you don't believe in any of these guys. Right. And then there's no focus. There's no point of leadership. It's just we're throwing anyone out there. And that's how teams start to fall apart fast. And listen, Pitt's falling apart right now. Like they're 1-4. There's got to be a lot of questions in the locker room about what's going on. And that to me is part of the problem. But if you start cycling through quarterbacks, you speed up that process so much faster.
Yeah, I think the only way to do it, as we round up the answer to that question, is I think that it might come to a certain point this season where you have to start looking at 2024. I don't think we're drastically far from that, honestly. Yeah. And if you're going to do that, I think you got to be open and honest and say that, look, we need to evaluate both of these guys. I don't see a reason why Yarnell should not get similar opportunity to Veyer, but vice versa, neither of those guys have done anything to deserve a spot over Phil, aside from the fact that Phil himself has been bad. So if you're going to give one a shot, give both a shot, but make it clear that, hey, for the remainder of the year, we're going to be doing a two quarterback system, and it's going to be these two guys. And we're going to try to find our starting quarterback last year. They did it with, other positions last season, and they're doing it with other positions this season. But what you don't want is to have a mess like they had at punter last year at quarterback, where they're just going every series, it's a different guy. Is it this guy? Is it that guy? Or whatever. I think there's a way to go about it. But I also think that you need to figure out other positions before you really commit to finding your quarterback of 2024, because like Pat said at the end of Saturday's game, do you really want to throw out someone else in there when the offensive line's playing this bad? I think he said Dan Marino couldn't even do well with that type of blocking. I would probably disagree with that. I think Marino probably would find a way to complete more than 5 of 15 attempts, but nonetheless,
he'd make a way. Yeah.
Yeah. But I get what he's saying. Two more questions here. This one comes from the ghost of Pitt script. What are the chances Pitt has its worst season since 1998? In 1998, it went 2-9 overall and 0-7 in the Big East. Did they win another game? I don't know. Carter, you can start.
That's a good question. I don't know. The way I said this at in the third quarter when that game started getting out of hand against Virginia Tech, if they play that way like they did against Virginia Tech and like they have two out of the last three, because I think Cincinnati, they at least fought back and that effort might win you some games. West Virginia was abysmal. This game was abysmal. If you play like that for the rest of the season, you're toast. Yes, you might win one game against, it might just be Wofford. But I do think that this team still has talent on it. I still think they can rebound. This bye week is coming at an important time. What's going to tell a lot is how they come out firing against Louisville. Louisville has potential on their team. I'm not picking them to beat Louisville, but if you could come out and at least show fire and make that a competitive game and show growth from before the bye week, that will say a lot to me. And I'm like, okay, maybe you can bang with Wake Forest or Boston College and you can sneak a couple wins in there. Maybe something can be built in this season. But right now, you're right. This is getting close to being about 2024, and everyone's going to look at that about the quarterback. But I look at this about the trenches. You got to see these young guys. Who's going to step the heck up and punch somebody in the mouth? And that's where Pitt needs to be at least able to do. Like we're talking about, I'm not so sure the next future Pitt super quarterback that's going to make their passing game super relevant, as a national conversation again, is on this roster right now. And maybe it is, but I know that what they have is a lot of highly recruited guys that they've added to both sides of the ball. and they need those guys to be able to step up, as well as other playmakers at corner and wide receiver. They need guys to develop, and that's what this process needs to be about. I think that if they're able to show that against Louisville, they'll be fine. They'll maybe get 4 or 5, maybe 6 wins if they go on a crazy tear. But each week we've been saying we're waiting for the bounce back. It hasn't happened yet. We have to see some sign of life against Louisville, or it will be 1998 all over again.
I don't know if you can pick this Pitt team to win another game right now. As the way things currently stand, I have no reason to. If I was like an odds maker, I'd make Pitt an underdog in every one of its remaining games, including the Thursday night home game against Boston College. I just, this team goes against everything that we've typically known about a Pat Narduzzi era Panther team. It's not tough, and people are going to be pissed with me saying that, but it's not a tough football team. It gets bullied in the trenches, like Carter has pointed out. It's not deep. It can't stop the run, and it can't run the football. So with that being said, you know, in past years, I would look at them being in a tough hole, and you would say, you know what, they're going to figure it out. These games, these big games, these are games that Pitt shows up. Pitt always plays tough on the road at Notre Dame. Pitt always dominates Syracuse. You could go to those past cliches. Pitt's going to be able to, you know, play well in November, like it did last year, where it went 4-0 and you know, sparked a 5-0 finish. But this team looks to be an anomaly in the Pat Narduzzi era, because it does not have any sort of identity that a past Pat Narduzzi team had, where, like I said, it's tough in the trenches, it stops the run, it's able to run the football. And another thing that was able to pull Pitt out of its most notable holes throughout the Pat Narduzzi era was a guy named Kenny Pickett, who, you know, when times were tough, when it lost 51-6 at home to Penn State, when it fell to 4, or when it lost 4 in a row during the pandemic season, when it was 4-7 heading into a home game against Miami, who was number 2 in the country to end the year. I mean, Kenny Pickett was a guy who fixed a lot of problems, and he's not around. And all the other areas that I mentioned are not performing well. So based off of that, yeah, it's hard to pick them to win another game. I don't think they'll finish 1-11. I think you'd have to assume that something is going to turn around for Pitt. But right now, it's hard to predict what area that's going to happen in. I don't know if it's going to be a quarterback stepping up, offensive line stepping up, running backs just taking completely over. Something might happen, but right now I'm done playing the look ahead schedule game, because right now, if you ask me, I think they're up against it against every single opponent until something else looks different. So we'll go now to our final question. This comes from CC. Pitt under Narduzzi he said in his question that he submitted to us that Pitt was 14-15. I actually looked it up. I believe they're 14-14 in night games in Pat Narduzzi's era. This number skews, obviously, as the numbers are a bit more negative this year. But is there anything to Narduzzi and his coaching support staff being unable to get this team properly ready for night games? All right, so take a look at this again. He said 14-15. I found that, based off my research, 14-14 is what Pitt teams are in the Pat Narduzzi era in games that started at 6:30 p.m. or later. All right. So, yeah, they're 14-14 this year, or overall in night games, but they're 0-4 in night games this season. So heading into the 2023 season, Pat Narduzzi's teams were 14-10 in night games. That's good for a .583 win percentage. That's not far off from his overall win percentage at Pitt, which is .601. Or it was .601 heading into this season. So no, I don't think there's a correlation. I think overall, his team's won close to 60% of their night games in his tenure. And his team's entering this season won around 60% of their overall games.
Yeah.
Now this year, they're bad in night games, but this year, they're bad in every game. I mean, they're losing to a lot of opponents. And yeah, they all happen to be at night, but I don't know if you move that contest to noon that Pitt's going to come out and be able to block Cincinnati's defensive line. I don't know if you move that game. I mean, I think Enter Sandman might be worth a point or two, but as far as, you know, crowd influence or whatever, but I don't know that that's going to change a ton. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I just don't see the night game element playing that big of a factor here.
I look at stuff like that and I think, man, we could be kicking things around and making up a lot of stuff that doesn't ultimately matter. I think they're what? They're 6-4, I think, in night games the last 2 years, you know, well, excluding this year, of course, leading out of that.
Yeah, I was going to say they're definitely more than four because they've lost four night games this year.
No, yeah, but I'm talking about in 2022 and 2021, I think they were 6-4 in their night games combined there. And I think ultimately it comes down to circumstances. Like, I don't think it's a night game issue. I think that this is a team that's struggling at certain issues of its game. That's where I think that people start to look for other things when they don't know what to look for when things are going bad, and they start looking for things. It's kind of like what Mike Tomlin was talking about when he brought up mojo. He just brought that up as a word, but he's like, you don't believe in like, you know, superstition or things like that, or, you know, like, I don't think those things are factors in what's going on. Pitt is not playing well because they're not executing in the right spots. They're unprepared in certain situations. Pat Narduzzi has to do a better job preparing his team to respond to different points of adversity in the teams that they're facing in front of them. I don't think night games have a problem. They looked pretty good when they beat West Virginia last year under the lights, you know, at Acrisure Stadium. They've looked pretty good in, you know, other games that they've played in night games, including at Miami, where they blew the doors off the Hurricanes on the road. The ACC championship. They were bright. They performed very bright there. You know, the week before that against Syracuse. I think we can make up a lot of different things and start going in all these different narratives when teams lose, as people like to do. But the bottom line is, you got to stick to what they're doing on the field, study that, apply that, look at how that compares to their stats and trends that you see there. Those are the things that you need to look at when Pitt struggles, not necessarily just their record at a certain time of day. And especially with this, where I don't think it correlates to anything that shows a big stat point.
And maybe we're way off. You know what? Maybe Pitt, like, they practice early in the morning. Maybe they're just better at playing at noon. I don't know. One thing is for certain, though. I mean, there have been a lot more night games recently. Last year, there was the most night games in the Pat Narduzzi era, 6. There's going to be at least 6 this year, as we've already played 4. Louisville's a 6:30 kickoff, and Boston College, I believe, is an 8 p.m. kickoff. There's at least 6 there. So, you know, but I don't know if the night games are, you could point the finger at a lot of things right now for Pitt, but 8 p.m. kicks, I mean, they piss everyone off equally, but they don't really contribute to the win-loss record, I think. So that would be my take on it here too, Carter. Any final thoughts as we wrap up?
Just that I think that Pitt football has so much more to clean up than just, you know, the typical things. I know people want Frank Cignetti fired and things like that. People have talked about that, and the offense is so bad. I'm not so sure that just magically solves anything. But Pat Narduzzi, like you said, he needs to reevaluate a lot of different things, and you need to be able to establish something on offense, something on defense. And I'm seeing guys not even coming off the ball, really, really well. Pat Narduzzi has talked about, you know, getting back to the basics at different times. I think that's what Pitt has to do. They need to throw everything else out. When you're not doing the basic things the right way, you need to get back to making sure that's what this bye week needs to be about. They need to be all about, hey, offensive line, you cannot be beat off the first step. You cannot be getting punched in the mouth like this. Defensive line, you better push them backwards. You've been recruited. You guys know, we know you guys have the talent. You better execute in these situations and finish plays. They start doing that, we can start getting to the bigger superficial questions as far as different schemes and bigger things. But if you can't do those basic things, you're not going to win a football game, especially with the way how this team is built.
It's bad. There's just no other way to put it. It's bad. But we're going to keep talking about it week in and week out here on the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He's Chris Carter. I'm Noah Hiles. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already and keep tuning in. We'll have more Pitt coverage. We'll have more Pittsburgh sports coverage on the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. Take care.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you enjoyed the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check out our Apple Podcast channel for more podcast content. Click below for a special deal of 99 cents for a 3-month subscription to the Pittsburgh Post Gazette.